Welcome to Radio Maria England for our final bonus content episode of season 4 of the Science and Faith Show. My name is Marta. I've been the host for all of the episodes, and I am joined by Francesca from Durham and Anthony from Leeds. They were two of the students who were part of the panel at the respective university, and they're here to tell us a little bit more about their experience with Radio Maria doing this part of the tour that we went to universities. So I'm just going to ask Francesca to introduce herself, to tell us a little bit more about what she's doing at Durham, what she hopes to do in the future, because I think she's probably at the end, if I'm not wrong, of her master's. I could be wrong, you correct me. But yeah, tell us a little bit more about what you do at Durham.
Yeah, so I'm in my third year of my undergraduate degree in physics at Durham, on a four-year course, so have another year to get my master's. And hopefully pursuing research in physics, but that's haven't made up my mind yet on that one.
And tell us a little bit more about what it is that fascinates you about your degree, why you've chosen it, and hopefully what you want your master's project to be on.
Yeah, so I originally chose to study physics because I really wanted to study like the fundamentals of creation. I'm fascinated by how the world actually works and want to kind of get closer and closer to the truth in that, and the as much as I believe science can get there. So I'm really interested in like fundamental particle physics and hope to do research in that. So what makes up everything and the tiniest things of matter.
Great, thank you. So again, Francesca was part of the panel at Durham. She was the first panelists, and she was absolutely brilliant. And we'll talk a little bit more about what Francesca's been doing with an organisation called God and the Big Bang later on. But I'm just going to ask Anthony, who was part of the panel at Leeds, to introduce himself and tell us a little bit more about what he's doing at the moment at the university and maybe his background, because I believe he's finishing his PhD, so there's a lot that he's done so far.
Hello, yeah, I'm, I don't say finishing PhD, I don't know if you ever really finish a PhD, but I'm a honeybee scientist. I work here with, both in the field and in a lab, mostly doing molecular work, understanding how their communication signals interact with their sexual development. My background, I've not been at Leeds the whole time. I was at Brighton in the University of Sussex with a biochemistry degree, integrated masters in biochemistry down there, though I've always been doing honeybee stuff somewhere or another, either volunteering in labs or my research projects and that kind of thing. As to what I'm going to do next, who knows? I don't, certainly at this point. My hope is to go into the charity sector, actually, to work with charities like the SVP or CAFOD or something along those lines.
What is it that fascinates you about honeybees? Why are they important to study them? Why is it important to study them? And then why do you want to work for a charity? What particularly draws you to that field?
So honeybees are a type of insect called a eusocial insect. So they have this higher structure of social organisation, which in many ways parallels our own, though in many ways also doesn't. They represent something called emergent intelligence. So individually, they're very stupid. They're as stupid as any other insect. But together as a whole, as the 60,000 or so individuals, they make incredibly intelligent, well-informed decisions. And it's not obvious how they get from one to the other, from individuals to total decision making. So I've always been interested in it from a social structure perspective, and that's ultimately what I study, really. By always, I mean since the age of 11 or 12, I've been super into keeping ants and keeping bees and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't really have all that much relation to what I want to go into, to be honest. It's one part of my life is the science and the research, and the other part of my life is the social action and that kind of thing. I don't. My research is not particularly. I don't want to use the word impactful because I might get my money taken away from me. But it's academic more than real world application. So yeah.
Great. So I would like you both to comment on what it was like, the moment where you got recruited to do this season of Science and Faith. So what we know, how did you come to be part of it? What was it like? And then have you gotten anything out of it, I guess? So just tell us your thoughts.
Yeah, so I came across the project through my Catholic chaplain. I think an email was sent out to all of them, and pretty much straight away he emailed me saying, should we do this at Durham? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And I worked very closely with chaplain as the president of the CathSoc at the time. And so, yeah, I kind of saw it first. And being a science student myself, really wanted to get involved, because I think I said at the end of the episode we filmed, there's nothing I love to talk about more than Jesus and science. So being able to talk about both at the same time was a really great opportunity. As for what it's led to, I think it's led to an openness on both sides of kind of my life, where my course mates know I've done this project and ask me, you know, how is it you practice your faith and are a scientist or a science student rather. And then also bringing more science conversations into the chaplaincy, which can be a very theology heavy space at times.
Great. It's actually quite nice to hear that, because I feel like sometimes we don't get back in touch with the people that we've been with. For us, in a way, it's kind of conversations like these give us a little bit of closure, because we do the event, that's it, and we hope for the best in a way. But it's really encouraging to hear that, you know, you've had a chance to speak to your classmates, or coursemates, sorry, about that, and that, you know, in a way or another, I'm hoping that has allowed you to be more yourself around them and to share more parts of your life with them. So yeah, that sounds really good, actually. Thank you for sharing that. Anthony, how did you get recruited?
So similarly, I'm fairly active in the Catholic chaplaincy here, and Father Mark, the chaplain, said we were going to do this thing, is going to be really cool, and if you're interested, come and talk to me. And then immediately after Mass, having said that, came straight to me and said, hey, Anthony, would you be interested in doing this? And I was like, yeah, great, this sounds great. I know that the chaplaincy at Durham is very academic. It's not so much here. It's much more of a social space almost an escape from the academic space at the university. As part of a push that I've been trying to do here at the chaplaincy and other people have been helping with, it fit perfectly into this educational content or exploratory content, maybe, rather than educational content. I think university is more about exploration than education, really. So I thought, jumped on the opportunity, it was great.
Has it prompted more questions for you, Anthony, or do you think it's not really, as in for you at a personal level, would you see yourself getting more involved in things like this ever again?
I would absolutely get involved in things like this going forward. There's this perception, I think, of conflict between faith and science and various other like artificial barriers which exist in society. And a lot of the, whether that, you know, it's age-based barriers or it's politics-based barriers or whatever. And I think that my experience in chaplaincy now, this is my, oh goodness me, this is my ninth year in chaplaincy, university chaplaincy. And one of the things that I've always very much noticed is that everything's a lot better when you have a bit of everything, when people from different perspectives and different worldviews and different things come together. For example, some work I do with the SVP is how do you get more young people involved in the charity, as this similar idea of how do you reconcile these perceived differences, where the differences don't really exist, they're played up perhaps more than they exist in order to divide people. And so I'm always looking for opportunities to help step in and get people to cooperate rather than compete a little bit more.
I think there was also a side to the events that people didn't really see. Obviously, there's all the prep that we have to do. So we met with both the more senior speakers and the students over a Zoom call to chat about what the evening would look like. Then we do all the prep. Sometimes there's Mass, or for example, we did Vespers at Edinburgh when we did the event. And then there is a kind of nibbles and drinks that helps people network And in between the interview and the Q&A at the actual chaplain, so we had another 10 or 15 minutes to chat and to network and allow people to put their thoughts down to a piece of paper and ask questions. So that there's a side that people, I guess, don't see. Hope that it helped, you know, spark interesting conversations. We can talk about the future in a second in terms of science and faith and where we go from this, because there was obviously a goal that we had in mind when we went to universities. But I thought I'd share with you a little bit about the pre and post event surveys. So that's my I don't like that part of the events. We just have to ask people to fill out the surveys and stuff. I found it was a bit uncomfortable. So I always let other people ask that to do those things. I just want to share with you one of the first questions that people had to. So they fill out the same questions pre and post event. The first question was, can an understanding of science point towards God? And on the pre-event surveys, we had the ranking was 1, strongly agree, 10, strongly disagree. On the number 1 for strongly agree that an understanding of science point towards God was 43.8% pre-event. And then post-event, it was 55.3. So it looks like someone was swayed by some of your interactions and some of your conversations more towards the, I really strongly agree with that statement. For another one, for example, for number 4, can there be a dialogue between science and religion? So on the strongly agree, we had 75%. For the post-event, whereas the pre-event, we had 65%. It looks like we're doing something, I guess, if, you know, so I think sometimes people are a little bit lukewarm or not sure. And after seeing these things, they do lean more towards the side of conciliation and complementarity. I was quite shocked. So we also asked people, do you ever engage with the topics in science and faith? Choose all that apply. And people could choose between radio documentaries, YouTube, podcasts, books or research for my degree, conversation at school, Google. And so the one that got the highest percentage was YouTube, which was 79.5%, followed by podcasts and documentaries. So I just thought it was quite interesting, YouTube, because there's a lot of things on YouTube, right? So what would you suggest people should be looking out for to know whether something is misinformation or it is actually factual and reliable?
I think it's interesting because if people are specifically looking at science and faith dialogues, then maybe misinformation is not as important if you're not necessarily looking at science or faith kind of more separately. Like if you're just looking for it to open a conversation and prompt questions rather than taking it as fact, then what's out there probably isn't dangerous in that respect. But if you're taking the information from it, from either the science you're hearing or the teachings about the church or faith you're hearing, it could be a lot riskier if you don't have a solid grounding. From a point of view of science, if you've not been taught how to read science or what good science might look like, it can be hard to work out what's out there and what's reliable and what's not.
Anthony, we just saw that from the pre-event survey that most people get their information on science and faith from YouTube. So I was wondering if you have any thoughts around that.
Yes, there is always an issue with misinformation online. Whenever you get broad, anyone can make content, that's always a concern. I think I agree with Francesca actually that broadly speaking on individual topics, it's a fact-based approach is a lot simpler. And yes, it's where for me, the litmus test is usually very specific, fundamental things. So, for example, if you're looking for a Catholic understanding, is the person who's actually speaking, are they actually Catholic? That's a good start. Is the scientist who's speaking actually a scientist? Unfortunately, since becoming relatively knowledgeable in my field, I've discovered that most of the science stuff in my field is mostly wrong online. In very subtle ways, which gives you poor understanding, which then leads to more misunderstanding. The way that I usually do it, and I do also access most of my content through YouTube and through podcasts and that as well, is that find someone who is reliable. And there are some big names who are reliable, like Mark Schmidt, for example, in America. And stick with those, and then if they recommend people, you can have a look at those. It's that kind of a process. Unfortunately, it's very tricky if you're working from a point of zero knowledge to know what's good and what's bad. But there's also a lot of people around you who do know this stuff as well, right? If your local priest, your local experts, whatever, they're there, you can ask them to say, is this okay, is this good, and they can give you a good opinion too. That's what I do. I have a lot of the other people in the chaplaincy, come up to Father Mark or to me or to some of the other more older, more experienced people in the chaplaincy, in that isn't uncommon. And a lot of the time you're saying, yeah, that's totally fine, because most of the stuff online really is fine. It's just when you try to get deeper, it can get a little bit more problematic.
Great. I was just looking at another of the questions of the post-event survey, and one of them was, how did you find out about today? And it was around 40% from the parish newsletter. So we had both universities and parishes. So a parish newsletter was one of them. Instagram, I think, had like 1%. It seems like social media wasn't making too much of an impact in terms of the attendance for this event. So it was 40% from the parish newsletter. And then we had 53 word of mouth. So I think sometimes we underestimate how powerful a personal invitation is. You know, I want you to come specifically to this event. So I just found that quite interesting that word of mouth was the highest percentage, and then, you know, parish newsletter, that's obviously, you know, I would expect that. Social media seemed to have the least impact in whether people decided to attend our event or not. So yeah, I mean, they might have to do with the fact that, you know, maybe they don't follow the chaplaincy or whoever on Instagram, and maybe the Radio Maria England's account, they don't follow that, so they would never find out about that. There's hope for human communication still being driving us forward in society. I just wanted to discuss a little bit about the future. From our end, from the science and faith point of view, we received the very generous funding from ECLAS to take the radio science and faith conversation to parishes and to universities, two very different environments. And from the universities, we were looking for students who would be willing to take part in the field of science and faith communication in some way or another. So we've partnered with an organization called Gone on the Big Bang, who operates from St. John's College in Durham. And they do a lot of science and faith workshops for primary, secondary schools. And they also do day cathedral events where many schools come together. And they do workshops around science and faith, and then a Q&A with the scientists and theologians. And so that was part of my journey. So this organization has played a major part in me getting involved with science and faith, and eventually with Radio Maria. And that's why we're coming together with them to find more people to go to these schools and to teach our students, because part of our survey as well was, you know, what has had the most influence in your perception or understanding of science and faith. And it was the top answers were school and family and theology. So it looks like that environment is very, very important. So schools are important, and that's why we want to be out there. And so I have had the experience of being at God in the Big Bang events, and Francesca has also had the experience of attending one of them and also being part of the Q&A. So I was wondering if you could share what the day was like at that sort of event, and where you want to take it from here as well.
Yeah, so I attended a day with year 13 students, so kind of the oldest they get. And I just kind of followed a group around, going to the workshops they were going to. And we had different people leading those workshops who were professional scientists to Christians, or other students who'd been involved with it for a bit longer. And I just got to follow the groups around, see what they were learning and see how they were growing as well. And all the different workshops looked very different, ranging from like climate science to looking at like curiosity as a concept. But what I really loved was seeing students question the leaders. And as the day went on, it went from like zero participation in the opening to people really grilling us with questions on the panel. And, you know, maybe they didn't agree with our beliefs, but I think you could tell they do a similar thing with surveys to you've been talking about. There was no longer that barrier to having faith in science, even for people who weren't people of faith. It wasn't an impossible anymore, which I really loved to see.
Yes, and I think we're hoping that with the training we're going to do in the summer, so we're hoping that as many of the students who were part of the student panels for our events, as many as possible of those students, you know, are part of that training, so they can go out with God and the Big Bang, specifically to Catholic schools, to talk about science and faith. So if, you know, this training that we were going to have, hopefully at Durham in the summer at some point, what do you need? What tools do you think you need in order to go to schools and other events with older people, for older students like 13s or 12s? What tools do you think you need in the science and faith communication field to succeed?
I think a lot of the difficulty with specifically the older students is the questions they can fire. You can't prepare for all of them. So I think looking into how to deal with questions you don't know the answer to, without lying to them and making up something that isn't true, because that's not good faith or good science. That would be really interesting.
Great. I'm hoping Anthony also joins us for that training. What do you think you need, Anthony, to become an effective science and faith communicator? What should we provide you with?
I am always of the opinion that a greater understanding of apologetics is necessary for any form of public engagement with regards to faith, and the confidence that comes with that makes you way more likely to actually step up and answer the question, as Francesca put. Other than that, it's just, you know, it's just how do you motivate individuals? I've been spending most of my years as a student trying to motivate other people to help me do things, so I don't know. You know.
Yeah, I think that's an important one, especially when you do these events and you're talking at young people, and it'll be a point where you're that particular student at the back who seems to be not interesting is the one who's bothering me, actually, because they don't seem to be engaging with the topic. I would love to do some sort of classroom management in that. I think, yeah, you might. I mean, they're typically really good when you do these events. They're actually just excited to have someone from the outside come to their school, or just actually them going to the cathedral and doing the event. I think we should hopefully have all of those skills, you know, to build up confidence to how to respond to things. And also, I think one of the most important skills, if you ever do a joint panel with a Christian but a non-Catholic, is, you know, how can we, you get an answer and then you have three different people from three different denominations answering that question, you know, how do you navigate that environment where you want to be as respectful as you can, but also you want to be truthful. And I think it really likes what Francesca said about, you know, I want to be able to learn how to answer a question that I may not know the answer to fully, but not lying, you know, not making something up. So I think that's a really, really important skill. We are very excited to be doing the training, to get together with the students and get them ready and going to work with God and the Big Bang. Thank you for being with us today for an extra bonus content episode. We really, really appreciate it from our end at Radio Maria England. And once more, and for the final time, we would like to thank ECLAS for their generosity to allow the tours to parishes and universities possible. And I thank everyone at the Science and Faith team for these four seasons. We're going to take a bit of a sabbatical. Okay, we need a bit of a break. But I'm hoping that we will be back very, very soon. And in the meantime, we'll be working with the students and with Gone on the Big Bang and ECLAS on the background on this training for science and faith communication. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a great day. Thank you.